It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. So we're just talking about how cities can be remade by an influx of outsiders and change. But are we acknowledging the people who were already here? Listen to this Tlingit artist and storyteller, Nahan, reading his poem called Indigenous Homeless, about how we are avoiding our native people. We recorded Nahan in the U District, where his uncle experienced homelessness.
I got a sign that reads, I need change, we need change, and you pretend you can't read. But I ain't talking about just what jingles in your pockets. I'm talking about how your silence is violence, how you're just another one of their accomplices, how us indigenous are 7 times more likely to be out here living on the streets than any of you white peeps. I see you walking by every day, avoiding eye contact with me by gazing into your creator screens, bitten apples, Android machines, forgetting about your humanity. The change I need to see is you bringing your spirit back into your body, to use your privilege to actually help somebody. See, they call me homeless, but the whole entire earth is my home, so how can that truly be?
My next guest asks these questions too. Colleen Echohawk Hayashi is executive director of the Chief Seattle Club that works with Native people who are homeless or low income, and she's a member of the KUOW board. Good to see you again, Colleen.
Good to see you, Bill. I'm glad to be here.
First of all, do you have any reaction to that, to the excerpted poem that we just heard from Nahan?
Yeah, well, I'm really grateful for Nahan for sharing it and for his art. And my reaction is that at the core of who we are as a city is a Native city, that we are a city that's named after a great chief of the Suquamish Duwamish descent. And we don't always know and feel that in this city. I think that...
Why is that?
You know, I think that we have an issue where we don't really want to engage in it. We don't really want to remember that that is the fact that there, you know, in 1986, that Native people were banned from even being in with the city limits. The fact that we have so many Native people who are homeless. If you're Native in the city, you're 7 times more likely to be homeless. And I think that's jarring for us as good Seattleites. Like, we believe in the goodness of people and we want to do good for other people. But it's a stark reality that is hard to grasp.
Why do you think that is, that Indigenous people are 7 times more likely to be homeless?
Well, there's a lot of historical factors that have contributed to Native homelessness. We have things like, you know, the reservation systems that moved us away from our traditional homelands. We have systems like boarding schools that moved us out into boarding school systems away from families. And what happened then is that many of our relatives out there who were in the boarding schools, when they got through the boarding school system, they had lost track of their families and they moved into urban centers. And so, in fact, at the Chief Seattle Club where I work, we have folks who never were returned back to their family and just kind of moved into urban centers and became homeless. And then the Urban Relocation Act of 1956, where people were moved out of their reservation systems into cities. And that is when the homeless Native population really became an issue in not just Seattle, but other cities around the country.
And are there solutions that especially work for Native people?
Yes. Great question. I'm glad you asked that, because I truly believe that the way that we are going to see our Native homeless population brought back into housing and into wholeness and wellness is everything to do with trauma, like talking about the trauma, dealing with the generational historical trauma that is a part of the problem and the issue that we have within our Native homeless community. With myself, even my relatives, my staff, we all have experienced this trauma. And so I believe that a big part of seeing us come into wholeness and wellness is to deal with that trauma. And that is going to happen through reconnection with culture and traditional spirituality. So that's part of the
work
that
going to happen? Who's doing what to acknowledge and deal with this trauma?
Well, I would say it's our Native organizations in this city. We have some incredible Native organizations like the Saddling Health Board, United Indians of All Tribes, Mother Nation, my organization, the Chief Seattle Club, and all 4 of those organizations. We are focused on bringing our people inside, out of the rain, getting them into wonderful, comfortable places where they feel like they can truly be a Native person without any discrimination, without any prejudice, that they're going to be loved and accepted and welcomed in our organizations.
How are they feeling a prejudice now?
Well, I think that just number one, if you look at the data, like we just talked about, we're more likely to be homeless. And you have to think about what has contributed to that. That has been discrimination and prejudice. We saw only 5.5 years ago now, John T. Williams was shot by our police. There is just so many stories that I hear from the folks that I serve at my organization where they feel invisible. They feel like no one is looking at them. No one wants them there.
That's what that poet was talking about
exactly.
In part, invisible.
Yes, exactly.
Why, you mentioned that Seattle is named for a Suquamish, mm-hmm. Duwamish chief. Why are we not known for that? I mean, I don't see Chief Sealth on the city's homepage. We have totem poles.
Right. Yes, so totem poles is a problem in my book because totem poles were actually brought back from Alaska Native villages. They were stolen from Alaska Native villages by the gold miners that went up north, and they brought them back, and they were exciting and different, and they became sort of the symbol here in our city that actually does not represent Coast Salish people. I am not a Coast Salish person. I am from the Pawnee Nation of Oklahoma and brought in Athabascan in Alaska, but I was always taught as a Native person to remember where we're at right now, and that's Coast Salish territory. And Coast Salish people did not have totem poles. They had welcome poles. They look very different than the totem poles that we have scattered around our city right now.
What does a welcome pole look like?
It's carved differently. I'm not an expert on these poles, but mm-hmm. they look different. You could tell they're different. There's examples of them in different places, like out at Tulalip or Puyallup and Muckleshoot. But as far as I know, we don't have any actually in our city. They're all appropriated from Alaska Native villages.
Well, I brought up totem poles, but I want to ask you, what is more visibility? What would that look like?
Oh, I think there's so many incredible opportunities that we have as a city. You know, I listened to the Primed podcast this morning, and I was thinking about
this is KUOW's new podcast about Amazon.
Exactly, that you were speaking about earlier mm-hmm. today. And I was thinking about how we are in this opportunity in our city. We've changed a lot, and we are continuing to change. And I think that we have an opportunity for art to really become a new part of our city that really accurately represents the Coast Salish people in this territory. So I think that the other thing that always concerns me, I've been privileged to sit on on the Pioneer Square Preservation Board and work with the different preservation boards. We don't have a preservation board for Coast Salish people or even urban native people or that culture. Like, what does that mean that we are more excited about preservation of Pioneer Square or the Pike Place Market Historical Preservation Board, but we're not thinking about historical preservation of the Coast Salish people, and not just the preservation of their culture, but of who they are now. It's a thriving culture, and I think we have an opportunity to represent that better.
And you were telling me there's a city that does this, right?
Yeah.
Right up the road, right. Vancouver, B.C. What's the difference?
Well, I think when you go to Vancouver, B.C., it looks and feels more like a native city. The art is much more prominent. You'll see the different Coast Salish languages of that area more prominently. I think that when I go to Vancouver, which ironically is named after a colonizer or
yes.
an explorer, and we're named after Chief Sealth, when I go to Vancouver, it feels more like a native space and a native way. And I think we have a lot to learn from our relatives up north.
And help me with another example of what okay. you mean by Vancouver feels like a native city.
Well, you see things like the language, I think, you know, that is out there. I know that there's been talk and movement about what would it be like to have the Lushootse language be a little bit more prominent in our city, that we'd have, you know,
that's the language
city.
That Chief Sealth spoke.
Yes, exactly. And to imagine like what it would be like to have, you know, the under Pike Street, for instance, what would the translation be? And how could we incorporate more of that tradition? I think it's only good for us as a city. It's good for business. It's good for tourism. It's just a better way that we could be as a city.
And how does that change life for people? So Canadians, First Nations people, and Indigenous people here, how would that affect you? And I know you're not Coast Salish, but how would that affect people?
Well, You know, the reality is, I don't know. I think it would affect us a little bit. I think that there would be more visibility. I think there would be more interest in addressing the problems that we face as a community. But ultimately, I don't know if it would have it would have an impact, but not as big as we need. What we need is to have people really taking this seriously and asking ourselves, especially within the homeless context, what would it mean to have culturally appropriate services for Native people?
What's culturally appropriate in this case?
Well, I think that it would be something that's welcoming to a Native perspective instead of isolating and ostracizing a Native perspective. You know, we often talk about housing first in our city, about getting our homeless community inside, and I believe in that. I strongly think that is an appropriate response. But at the same time, I think it has to be culturally appropriate. It has to be a place where people feel welcome, where Native people and other people of color feel like this is a space for me. It's not just a white space, but it's a space where I can feel like I'm welcomed as a Native person.
And what would do that? What would be welcome?
I think there's so many things. I think number one is leadership. I think we need to have more Native perspectives on all the decision-making boards. I think that we also have opportunities to incorporate Native styles of housing, of ways of decision-making into our processes.
What's a Native style of housing?
Well, I always say that we've always known how to house our people. You know, we talk a lot about the high performance of our different housing mechanisms in the city. Before colonization, Native people had 100% success rate of performance, and I think that we need to have that opportunity to do that again. And it's something that, as a Native community, we're having to explore and understand because we haven't had that opportunity. And so that's why my organization and other organizations in the city are moving forward towards building our own housing.
Something Canada has done differently is an apology mm-hmm. for those crimes that you mentioned. Why is the United States hasn't done the equivalent, has it?
Well, yeah, I think that's been a lot of us who've been involved in this movement for a while have reached out to our president to say, hey, is there an opportunity for an apology to come for all of the atrocity that happened for Native people? When I was in grad school, I was campaigning President Obama. I thought, this is our opportunity. This is the guy who will do it. However, we didn't ever receive any concrete response. And I think the reason for that is that there would have to be payment made to some of our tribes and some of our people because of what they lost. That's what's happened in Canada and Australia.
Reparations,
yes.
Huh. One thing you're doing, you mentioned you were on the Pioneer Square Preservation Board, which I don't associate with demolishing buildings, but you are demolishing a building in Pioneer Square and making one that will look and feel like a Native building. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I still have a lot of hurdles to go through, including that Pioneer Square Preservation Board. But what we hope to do in Pioneer Square is offer a space that looks and feels like a Native building. If you go into the building we currently have, the Chief Seattle Club, it feels like a Native space. We have Native art. We have Native people. We've created a gathering circle that is for prayer and for ceremony. And so we hope to extend that in Pioneer Square right next door to us. We hope to build around 80 to 100 units of housing that would be Native preference so that we could bring Native people into our housing that we have there with the full services of the Chief Seattle Club, which is right next door, which is a human service agency. So we're excited about that opportunity.
The head of the Chief Seattle Club and also a member of the KUOW board is Colleen Echohawk Hayashi. Thanks for talking with us
today.
Thank
you, Bill.